Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
In the past few days, I've begun to atone for my private failings with my wife, Soda, my children, and my entire family. The remorse I feel will always be with me. Words cannot describe how grateful I am for the love and compassion they have shown me. From those to whom much is given, much is expected. I have been given much: the love of my family, the faith and trust of the people of New York, and the chance to lead the state. I am deeply sorry that I did not live up to what was expected of me. To every New Yorker and to all those who believed in what I tried to stand for, I sincerely apologize. I look at my time as governor with a sense of what might have been. But I also know that as a public servant, I and the remarkable people with whom I worked have accomplished a great deal. There is much more to be done, and I cannot allow my private failings to disrupt the people's work. Over the course of my public life, I have insisted, I believe correctly, that people, regardless of their position or power, take responsibility for their conduct. I can and will ask no less of myself. For this reason, I am resigning from the office of governor. At Lieutenant Governor Patterson's request, the resignation will be effective Monday, March 17, a date that he believes will permit an orderly transition. I go forward with the belief, as others have said, that as human beings, our greatest glory consists not in never falling, but in rising every time we fall. As I leave public life, I will first do what I need to do to help and heal myself and my family. Then I will try once again, outside of politics, to serve the common good and to move toward the ideals and solutions which I believe can build a future of hope and opportunity for us and for our children. I hope all of New York will join my prayers for my friend David Patterson as he embarks on his new mission. And I thank the public once again for the privilege of service. Thank you very much.
Governor Spitzer with his wife, Silda Wall Spitzer, leaving the podium, leaving the stage, leaving the room without taking any questions. Several reporters trying to shout questions. I couldn't hear what they were, but you could pretty well guess what they were. The governor saying that he appreciated the support of all the people who've rallied around him the last 2 days. He said, "I sincerely apologize." He said, because of the accomplishments that he's had, he doesn't want them to stop here. And as a result of his private failings, that he has insisted that people take responsibility for their actions. And so he's going to do it. And he announced his resignation as governor. He said, the greatest glory as he leaves public life is not in never falling, but how you pick yourself back up afterwards. And he was very definitive in saying he was leaving public life to deal with his personal issues, and that when he returns to the sphere of trying to work for the public good, it will be outside of politics. WNYC political director Andrea Bernstein.
And leaves the stage of politics. I mean, let's not forget that this is the man who believed he was going to be the first Jewish president, and who many people believed that his political career was golden, that it had nowhere to go but up. He did have a very rough year as governor, but so did George Pataki. And he went on to serve three terms. It's not uncommon Michael Bloomberg had a very rough time at the beginning of his administration and is now a very popular mayor. So the sense, he said, I leave with what a sense of what might have been. And my guess is a lot of New Yorkers are wondering that, too, what might have been. I mean, 70% of the people voted for him. People are very unhappy with his behavior. They're unhappy with this first year of his government. And yet the ideals that he ran on is something that New Yorkers obviously wanted to succeed by the margins that they supported him. So I think that a lot of New Yorkers will be thinking about that, too, what might have been.
WNYC's Arun Venugopal in the room where the governor just spoke. Arun, how did it look to you?
Well, you know, you could just kept on looking at, I kept on looking at his wife. She's standing there right next to him, and she kept on looking right into his eyes as he spoke. You couldn't help but feel for her. She seemed very composed, I must say. She was tired, as she has looked in the last couple of days. You know, he did his thing. It was just a very sort of clean, clean-cut presentation. And as he started walking away, there were a couple questions that were fired at them, just a couple. I think people knew that he wasn't really going to take any, but there was one from a New York Post columnist, Andrea Pazer, who said, Silda, are you leaving him? You had some reporters who kind of like just spun their heads sort of in disbelief. I think there was sort of a pang of pain when she said that, just like that anything like that would be said at that moment. But, you know, that was just, they just fired it off, and basically they had left the room, and it was over as quickly as it had started.
I was also watching the face of Silda Wall Spitzer during that, and she looked different than she did at the statement on Monday. She didn't look as downcast. She was looking more straight ahead. She looked much more composed. The word that you used, Arun, I would use the same word, and calm, and didn't look angry or certainly not on the verge of tears. Of course, she could be having all these emotions inside, but she was there to stand by Governor Spitzer, her husband, and support him at this time, despite her victimization in this. And Andrea Bernstein, it raises the question once again of the political wife and why, considering the nature of his transgression here, she felt either duty-bound or just wanted to come and be with him at this moment. She didn't have to.
Well, as you know, I, as a reporter, believe in shining the light on many things, but I do believe people's marriages are private. And, you know, I would never want to second guess anybody's decision. I don't know what goes on between them. They've always seemed to have a very functional relationship. And, you know, she has stood by him through this. She is herself an accomplished lawyer. She is also from North Carolina and has always exhibited a lot of grace under every circumstance that I've seen her. I've certainly seen her under nothing like this, clearly. But they have three children. They have a long marriage. And if she decides that she doesn't want to give it up over this, then that is not a decision that I would want to second guess.
Arun Venugopal, is there any other information coming, obviously not from the governor's lips, but are there any handouts or anything letting you know what the plea deal is or the exact terms of his departure?
Nothing of that sort, Brian. It's been very closely held, you know, we're all pretty much in the dark here. All we have is that 1 minute or 2 minutes of, you know, his words that he just delivered. So, no, we can only guess at this point.
And I don't know that we know that there is a plea deal in the offing. I mean, I think that there will be something announced at some point, but we don't have as of yet any kind of confirmation that there have been discussions that would result in it. Typically, those things take a while. All that we do know is that he said he would resign. He said he would turn over the power to Lieutenant Governor David Patterson on Monday, March 17th, to ensure an orderly transition of power. And we know that he said he's sorry and that he is leaving public life. I wouldn't be surprised to see him in the field of philanthropy someday, for example, the Elliot Spitzer Foundation, or perhaps a name, not Elliot Spitzer, but another name, that he is someone who has been in public life as a Manhattan DA, as a Manhattan assistant district attorney, as attorney general, and as governor. He isn't somebody that, I mean, he could have just gone into his family's real estate business. He could have joined a very big law firm, very lucrative white shoe law firm. So it would not be surprising for somebody who's done these things to go on in the field of philanthropy.
Right. And, you know, he didn't kill anybody. He didn't rob a bank. He didn't...
He didn't steal the state's money, you know, so far as we know.
So far as we know.
I mean, there's no evidence that he has done anything inappropriately with the public's money.
Right. You said we don't know even if there is a plea deal. Now, there was a widespread presumption, or at least widespread speculation, that the reason that he was holding out this long and not saying anything was not just to read the political tea leaves, but also to negotiate with prosecutors. It was reported in, I forget which paper this morning, it may have been the Post, that the governor and Mrs. Spitzer spent what was called an agonizing night deciding whether to accept a plea deal. So presumably he would want to use that bargaining chip of resignation from the governorship if he could use it and not just leave and then try to deal with the prosecutors.
Well, my understanding is that the complicating factor for this is if he had been accused of an ongoing scheme of using public money for private good, then his leaving the government, he could argue that would stop, and that so it would be a sort of a logical conclusion of that sort of investigation. The complicating factor is all that we know so far about the evidence against him, in addition to the Mann Act violations, is that he may have structured the money to hide his transactions. If it was his own money, then he can argue, well, that practice would stop by my not being governor. For example, these hedge fund advisors that he went after and the heads of insurance companies. So it's a complicated offer his resignation. And then what you're also doing is giving an appointed prosecutor the power to overrule the will of the people. So it's very, very complicated. The U.S. Attorney's Office for the Southern District has had nothing to say. The Justice Department has had nothing to say. So as of now, we do not have any confirmed information that a plea deal is in the offing for today or anytime soon.
If there is, it is really one of the several ironies of this situation that Spitzer, as Attorney General, did sometimes ask for top corporate officials to resign in exchange for not being criminally prosecuted.
Right.
And here he is.
The protocol, as I understand it, is for companies to say to the defense attorneys to approach the prosecutor and say, look, if so-and-so resigns, will that affect your decision-making? And my understanding is that prosecutors will take that into account when the argument can be made that they're leaving the company will put an end to the wrongdoing.
Ben Smith from Politico.com also joins us briefly now. Ben, your reactions to the governor's announcement?
Well, you know, he seemed to really get it, which was that he said that he had always expected people in positions of power to take responsibility for their actions, and he would too, and that is in fact why he had no choice, because he had never given anybody a break, and nobody was about to give him one.
So it was about the single standard and the political reality of the standards that he set.
Yes.
What happens now, Ben? What happens in Albany, as far as you know?
I mean, I think there's a lot of sadness up there, but I think also quietly a lot of relief that things can now basically go back to normal. Spitzer was this incredibly disruptive force in a very settled political culture, and now he's gone. I mean, he was challenging a system where the legislature has a lot of power and legislators have a lot of perks, and they didn't like that so much, and I don't think his successor is likely to do that.
Ben Smith, thanks a lot for coming on with us. Public Radio's Albany reporter Karen DeWitt also joins us now from Albany. Hi, Karen.
Hi, Brian.
You watched the governor, I presume.
Yeah, you know, I watched it up here in the usually noisy, raucous press room that's set up for reporters here. And I'll tell you, you could have heard a pin drop when he started speaking, and even afterwards, just dead silence. I mean, we all knew he was going to do it, but it was just a stunning, stunning thing to watch, especially when it has so many implications for us up here covering state government in our daily lives.
Karen, you know, since you're a member of the Albany Press Corps, I have to ask you this. We know that when public officials are messing around in one way or the other, the press corps often knows it before it gets revealed. That was certainly the case with Jim McGreevy in New Jersey. At least there were widespread rumors. There were a few people in the press corps who felt that they had evidence, but they decided that it was a private matter, not a public matter.
Absolutely. There's a number of lawmakers up here that most people know have, you know, mistresses, but nobody thought that Eliot Spitzer would be one to do this. That is what is so completely shocking about it.
But with what has emerged in the last few days about just how much money he has apparently spent on this over how much time and with how many, you know, individual contacts, there's an indication there that, boy, if he hit it, he hit it really well for a long, long time.
Yeah, well, you know, I don't think he told anybody about it. He made all the arrangements himself. And he always did it out of town. He never did it in New York City. And when he was in D.C. or Florida or any of the other alleged places, I don't think he was as scrutinized. So I guess he was smart in doing that if he wanted to live a double life. I think if he had done it in New York City, someone who recognized him, you know, might have seen him. So maybe that's why it was able to be secret for so long. And also because a lot of people kind of believed the persona that he said that he was, kind of squeaky clean, loved his family, loved his children, very much a family man. And I guess people believed it.
This is WNYC FM and AM New York and WNYC.org. I'm Brian Lehrer. The Leonard Lopate Show coming up in 5 minutes, as usual. But our political director, Andrea Bernstein, is still with us. And, Andrea, you have a question for Karen?
Yeah, Karen, I was wondering whether, I mean, there's a lot of talk about how everybody likes David Paterson, at least the legislators like him so much better than they liked Eliot Spitzer. And I'm wondering, you've been in Albany for a while, do you think that Paterson will be able to have a reform agenda and at the same time be accommodating and well-liked by
I think that's a huge unanswered question. He's been well-liked because he hasn't been in a position of real power. It's a lot easier, I think, to get along with people when you're Senate Minority Leader or Lieutenant Governor. If you're governor, sometimes you got to kind of crack heads, not in the style that Eliot Spitzer did, which offended everybody, but you have to be tough, and I think that's the biggest question about him. Is he tough enough to get these people together, or are the Assembly and Senate just going to run right over him like they did over George Pataki in George Pataki's final years as governor?
And, Karen, we just got this statement. It's probably in your email inbox as well from David Paterson. It's now the first official thing that he's said on this. He says, and I'm quoting from the statement from Lieutenant Governor, soon-to-be Governor David A. Paterson, "Like all New Yorkers, I am saddened by what we've learned over the past several days. On a personal level, Governor Spitzer and Silda have been close and steadfast friends. As an elected official, the governor has worked hard for the people of New York." And the statement goes on to say that my heart goes out to him and to his family at this difficult and painful time. I ask all New Yorkers to join Michelle and me in prayer for them. It is now time for Albany to get back to work, as the people of this state expect from us. Karen, what do you think about the relationship between my sense has always been that Paterson and Spitzer have been relatively close as governors and lieutenant governors go. Do you think that any Spitzer or anybody from his circle will be advising a Paterson administration?
Well, yeah, we already saw that yesterday. His top policy advisors who work here were meeting with Paterson's top staff. We saw them going in and out of offices. So they are definitely already trying to be helpful to him, and they will help him. But as for Spitzer's top staff people, I don't think they'll stay around. They'll have to leave, and Paterson will have to surround himself with his own people. But in terms of, like, the top health advisor, the top environmental advisor, I would imagine he would keep them, and they seem to be very willing to help smooth the transition.
By the way, in case anybody's wondering, our reporter Bob Henley is reporting that a spokesperson for the Albany County DA confirms that the criminal probe of the Spitzer administration's so-called Trooper Gate that started last summer is ongoing.
Kind of pales in comparison, but yes, I mean, there's no reason that that's going to end just because Spitzer isn't governor anymore. And who knows, it may be easier now for them to get to the bottom of what was going on with that whole thing.
The Leonard Lopate Show coming up in about 3 minutes. Do you expect that any particular policy differences between David Paterson and Eliot Spitzer may now come to the fore of the state agenda? I think that we've heard from a number of guests this morning that Patterson is more from the progressive wing of the Democratic Party than Eliot Spitzer was. Do you expect to see any early indications of that in policy initiatives?
Well, in terms of things like maybe pushing gay marriage more, but some of the other things, I'm not sure. I'd have to go back and examine them. I'm sure there's going to be some differences. I don't think he has to feel like he just has to pick up where Spitzer left off and do everything that Spitzer wanted to do. He's certainly got to form his own agenda, but boy, he doesn't have a lot of time. The budget's due in less than 20 days, and he's got to really hit the ground running.
And we heard State Senate Majority Leader Joe Bruno earlier make a statement and say that the Senate is going to pass its version of the budget this afternoon. Was he kind of throwing down the gauntlet to incoming Governor Patterson and saying, hey, we're acting, you're going to have to follow?
Yeah, well, it was scheduled on the schedule that the Senate and Assembly would pass their own budget versions, and I think that's something to watch. Are they going to try to sneak a bunch of things in when nobody's looking, things that they want that may be controversial, maybe even pay raises for themselves? This would be the time to get some of that stuff in before anybody can catch up to them.
Karen, you covered David Patterson when he was the State Senate Minority Leader. Do you think he's strong enough to be the governor of New York?
Well, like I said, I think that's a question that's going to be the most interesting thing to watch, because he hasn't been tested in this particular way, and we won't really know till he really, you know, gets into it with the, you know, we have a very strong legislature in New York State, and you know, they certainly foiled Spitzer in many ways, and we'll see how Patterson can manage them.
All right, Karen DeWitt, covering Albany for New York Public Radio. Thank you very much for joining us.
Thank you.
The Leonard Lopate Show is coming up in just a minute. We will replay on the Leonard Lopate Show the full resignation statement from Governor Spitzer that came about 12 or 15 minutes ago. As he will talk about this, too, before he goes on to some other things. Governor Spitzer resigning within the hour officially with WNYC political director Andrea Bernstein. I'm Brian Lehrer.